Our next in rate interest of Zaden rate N of Zaden rate N of Zaden rate in rate interest of Zaden in rate interest of Zaden.
Council may approach and proceed when you're ready.
Thank you. Good afternoon. May I please the court and counsel, my name is Lauren Wally. I'm an attorney with the Douglas County Public Defender's Office. I'm here on behalf of the appellant, my client, John Andrews. John Andrews is 90 seconds today from the federal. I have two assignments today. I'd like to focus mainly on the second one in regarding the analysis of best interest. As the court's aware, best interests are presumed to be served by a child having a relationship with his or her parents. This presumption is overcome only when the state is able to prove a parent's unfit. My argument and position today is that the state was unable to meet that burden, mainly because their reliance on the case in chief stems primarily from Mr. Newberry's incarceration. Specifically, the testimony at our termination hearing was exactly that. The primary witness for the state was the main caseworker on this case. She testified during both direct and cross-examination that when she was looking at factors in determining parents of fitness, she relied solely on Mr. Newberry's incarceration. She listed specific factors within that regarding the length of time that Zaden was out of home care, the communication or available bond between Mr. Newberry and his child, as well as his access, her access in silence, to view and observe his parents in silence. All of those factors are things that are directly related to and a response to Mr. Newberry's specific incarceration. That is in direct conflict, in my opinion, with the holding was in England, where the court held that while the state did prove that there was a lacking of a strong bond between the young child and the father, that was a result and the concerns and the factors mentioned to the court were primarily anchored on that individual's incarceration. The court was not a ground for termination. The state's argument at our termination hearing again focused on some of those same factors, specifically that Mr. Newberry was not able to establish a bond with his child, that he did not send letters to his child, that he didn't participate in programming or secure housing. However, the testimony from both of the state's witnesses, the case witness and the foster parent, stated that video visitation, which was the only visitation even available to Mr. Newberry, would not have proven meaningful or beneficial for the child of this age, specifically because the child was at a developmental stage where he was incapable of having conversations. I believe the testimony was that he had just begun to learn to speak at the time of the actual termination hearing. The other thing that was also present in this case was restrictions because of the COVID-19 pandemic. When Mr. Newberry was incarcerated at the Douglas County Correctional Center, Ms. Bailey, caseworker, testified in-person contact was never possible. She was able to have, in-person contact with the child was never possible. She was able to have visits herself while he was at Douglas County Corrections and then had to switch to communicating via letters once the restrictions came into place. Ultimately, Mr. Newberry was moved to the Lincoln Penitentiary in May of 2020, at which time he continued to communicate via letters and did receive response at that time from Mr. Newberry. Both Mr. Newberry and Ms. Bailey stated that in-person contact, while previously it was known that that would be available at the state penitentiary, was not currently happening because of restrictions in place by COVID-19.
But didn't she testify that while there was this period of communication, that it just dropped off, that there was no further communication after, no further communication, right, and then just nothing, just nothing?
I would argue that the testimony at that termination hearing wasn't clear in that regard. Ms. Bailey stated that she had sent him a monthly letter starting in May. She received a response in both June and July from Mr. Newberry. And then she recalled her last letter that she sent to Mr. Newberry was in August that included pictures. The termination filing then happened in September. There was the filing, the petition happened in September. There was no further testimony deduced as to her communication following that September date to when we were present in June, in terms of what her communication was in relation to Mr. Sperry.
There was no evidence of what she did in that time frame, September to January.
I would argue that she had stated she had sent monthly letters, but specifically when asked the last time she recalled sending a letter, she had testified was in August of 2020.
So initially, I believe an IDI was requested, right?
That's correct.
And then there was a delay in getting that completed?
That's correct. The IDI was initially ordered, I believe, when the case first came in some of those first appearances, and I believe Ms. Bailey testified that there was a lag partly on the fault of her agency as well as partly on the ability for providers to come into the correctional center at that time. But the IDI was completed when Ms. Nightingale was still at the Douglas County Correctional Center. We did receive an evaluation that recommended him to go see outpatient therapy. Ms. Bailey and Mr. Newberry both testified that that therapy was unable to occur at either the Douglas County Correctional Center or when he was placed at the state penitentiary. But the only actual program or service ordered by the juvenile court for Mr. Newberry to comply with was that initial diagnostic and interview, which he did once it was made available to him to participate in it.
What about any voluntary programs?
I think the evidence, in my opinion, was lacking in that regard. Both Ms. Bailey and Mr. Newberry stated that he voluntarily participated in a violence reduction program. He was on a wait list for appearance in class. The other testimony from both of those individuals was that it didn't appear programming was occurring due to restrictions with the COVID-19 pandemic. We didn't hear from anyone at the state correctional facility or from Douglas County Corrections as to the specifics of those restrictions. We just heard from both Mr. Newberry and Ms. Bailey as what their understanding was of what was available to occur. Mr. Newberry stated in his testimony that when he was told or under the informed that he could participate in the parenting class, he put himself on the wait list, but it didn't at the time of our termination hearing, he had not gotten to the point on that list where he could participate in that program. His testimony was that when he first got to the state penitentiary, programming was not available.
And the destination program for the state claim was made available to him that he didn't participate in. I believe his testimony was no one informed him of that.
Correct. His testimony was that he did not initially know of the destination DAS program, and then when he did further look into it or find information from it, his understanding, as well as Ms. Bailey's, was that at that time, the only service that program was offering was the video visitation. Ms. Bailey's testimony, I believe, was that initially the idea would be that that would be a platform for inmates to be able to have in-person feeling visits. However, due to those restrictions with COVID-19, those were not occurring. And again, as both Ms. Bailey and the foster parents stated, video visits with a child of this age and development would have been difficult, and also I would argue potentially not necessarily meaningful in order to really understand how a bond is occurring between an infant child and someone via a video screen.
Did the father put on evidence to demonstrate what occurred between September 2020 and then January 2021 hearing in terms of steps he actively took to try to improve the communication?
There was not evidence offered by either the father or the state in terms of an improvement or I would also say steps backwards in terms of his communication at that point.
But the father would have been in a position to testify to, because he did testify to what steps he took, and he really did not convey any information.
I think at that point, the information he conveyed is that whenever he would speak to his caseworker, he would say the same thing. He would say, I want pictures of my son, I would like updates on my son. And his saying, that communication stopped, is what his testimony was, is that he had stopped receiving pictures, he stopped receiving his updates, and those are things he wanted to have. He also stated that his communication with Ms. Bailey, when they were having conversations and contact via letters or their in-person meetings while he was at corrections, was he routinely stated his desire to reunify with his son, as well as his plans once he were to be released, which was expected at that time. He stated that in June 2021. In terms of the specific best interest that were offered by the state, I think, as I mentioned in my brief, information regarding the minor child in this case was rather minimal in terms of our discussions regarding Jaden and his needs. There was discussions regarding his age, his length of time in foster care, and that was ultimately really all that was discussed. There was nothing presented by the state via the caseworker or the foster parent as to what specifically this child needs, or why specifically Mr. Newberry would be presumed to not be able to meet those needs once he was able to be released.
What is your position with regard to a parent who engages in unlawful criminal activity to the point they are then incarcerated because that choice is made by the parent to engage in that unlawful activity, they're incarcerated. How long should the state have to wait before finding a criminal for this?
I think that our case law is helpful on that question. We have 43290G7, which gives us an amount of time in the 15 months, but when you look at case law specifically, in right, Aaron D discusses that the discussion of those 15 months also should still encompass the best interest, and specifically when you're looking at that, what reason did one parent have in terms of an opportunity to participate in programming in that 15 months? My understanding of where that 15 month time frame came from is that courts had decided that seemed like a reasonable amount of time for parents to show caseworkers or the court that they had progressed in parenting or had an opportunity to comply with the rehabilitation.
But if they're incarcerated, they can't take advantage of that to engage. That's your entire argument here, is that they've been able to engage in different practices to show because it was incarcerated. What if he, I mean, I understand that the record indicates that he may have been released this year, but what if he would have been sentenced to a place where he, a point where he would not have been even eligible for, say, the first 5 years of the child?
I think potentially the argument is extremely fact specific and inclusive in terms of specifically with this father, with his circumstances and legislative circumstances, with what the court knew in terms of his potential for release and expected release, for what this father was able to participate in, in terms of what was under his control and what was not, and then also specifically for the child. I think there'd be a completely different argument if we were talking about a 10-year-old child versus an infant who doesn't have the same means of communication than someone much older. And I agree with you that if the client had a 10-year incarceration, my argument would be different. But the specific circumstances and facts of this case, I believe, support my position and argument that the state did not meet their burden of proving that my client had a reasonable opportunity to participate in the program, or how this child would be affected adversely or positively if these parental rights were terminated. I just don't think that would have any chance.
Thank you. How long did we take over?
2 minutes and 45 seconds, Judge.
Would you add that to the extra?
Yeah.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Nathan Bardell. I'm the attorney for the Here today to respectfully ask the court to affirm the lower court's decision in this case. Due to the state's drastic and serious court recognized, one of the biggest distinctions is the compelling circumstances of the compelling circumstances. The actively persisting compelling circumstances.
Is that all during a pandemic?
No, Your Honor.
So it's a little bit different.
We are dealing with the argument.
Yes, Judge.
The circumstances are a little bit different, but I think that relates to the voluntary, the voluntary, the results in the incarceration, the circumstances around incarceration, the sentence, and derivative of those voluntary, would still be resolved.
Would still be resolved.
What evidence was there that he had opportunities that he didn't take advantage of?
In Ms. Bailey testified in her letter, she did inform him that she was involved in programs. She also spoke with him. The case manager, I believe, indicated to Ms. Bailey that she spoke with him. And that's probably the best program.
Another dispute about that, right? And I think Ms. Bailey said she either wrote a letter or wrote an email to the caseworker, but to me that was also the evidence was
not the letter or the email. Additionally, the program he could have just maintained contact. Again, circling back to the UNB Act, in that case, the appellant was prohibited from contact, therapeutic recommendation of the court accepted. However, despite that, he wrote regular letters to his child, regularly disclosed and wrote his child in therapeutic setting. Again, in that situation, the child was very young, 2 years old, we're dealing with children of similar ages, similar circumstances, one widely different engagement and parent. I think that's an important distinction to make. Additionally, regarding the child's best interest, you have to look forward into where the case is going. In Leland B, the father was able to specifically articulate where he was living, where he wanted to live, he had secure housing, and a halfway home, house of blood. And then from there, he was moved to his grandmother's house, and arranging for his grandmother to also take place with his child. But he was already searching for employment in a local newspaper, and that was presented. And I think that, again, is a stark contrast of where the evidence led us in this case.
But in this case, the father testified that he had some money coming to him so that he would have some funds, so employment wasn't immediately necessary.
He did judge, but however, he was unable to provide the court with any specifics. All he could say was the settlement. And even then, it seemed almost like it wasn't quite finalized. What he indicated settlement was reached. Most people could be able to figure. Most people didn't know where that income was coming from. That income was a guaranteed source. Also with housing, also when pressed on the matter, when they had said he would pass on the matter, was planned. I think they and any child deserve more than that. And any child deserve more than that. Well, it'll happen. Here's my plan. Here's how I'm going to provide. And I don't think
so you're saying he needed to have someone on the outside take care of making those arrangements for him because he's obviously incarcerated, right? So he would have needed someone on the outside to help him get those things done.
Correct, Judge. And that's where the communication was missing. The services that are provided as a caseworker, that he never reached out to him. She never got a request. Any sort of resources that could have been made available to Ms. Newberry could have been released. So I think that contrasts the ticking of the housing.
What would have been the harm here, given the pandemic and how that made it a lot more difficult for people to engage in different programs? There are a lot of shutdowns. There's a lot of difficulties through the course of 2020 into 2021. What would have been the harm in waiting until his leave discharge date in June of this year to give him a little time to see if he did get employment, to see if he did find a place to live, to see how he handled parenting with his own child? What would have been the harm in that?
Judge, I think the common theme across the board is that children should not have to wait.
Not even another 6 months ago, we're talking about terminating.
No, Your Honor. I believe in this circumstance, child should not have to wait whether or not they're available.
But we don't know in this record whether he matured during his prior leave.
Not specifically from the record, Judge, but if we look at the evidence presented, the lack of participation in the program, he was on a wait list for a parenting class, and I believe he was able to do so, he wouldn't have been able to enroll to finish it by the time it was released.
Very, very lean, this record, in terms of what he did, that was actually available.
Yes, Your Honor.
Is that enough, then? I mean, when the record is this lean, should we, in our de novo review, affirm the termination of the parent's rights under these circumstances?
I believe so, Judge. I stand by my position. Again, we have to look at no plans for the future. He had not reached out for help for housing. He had not reached out for help for income. He was not able to articulate a way in which he would care for his upon his release. And I think that is important for the care of the So I don't believe the child should be forced away under those circumstances, especially given the lack of communication with the department. They did participate in violence reduction program, which is just a recognized. However, no specifics of that program were given to the secretary, and no idea how it relates to the care of the child or the child's
Shouldn't the state?
I believe that's evidence that should be there.
But isn't it the state's burden to show that it's a miscarriage? So isn't the burden of proof here on the state?
Yes, Your Honor. But again, the lack of communication. The first time the state heard from the violence reduction program was because of the lack of communication with Ms. Taylor. As she said, she sent large amounts of monthly letters between May and trial. However, only received early responses. It's safe to assume you have the ability to reach out. You have the ability to reach out.
Excuse me, counsel. Was there any evidence of what Ms. Bailey did in conjunction with the prison system to ascertain what programs would be available while he was there and what things he could do?
I believe Ms. Bailey did communicate with her identified case manager at the time. She provided a program. She suggested Destination DAD to suggest a familiarity with the program and connect the program penitentiary. She also tried to maintain contact with the monthly letters. She testified that there was a focus for her herself getting the first visitation for detention in the first pandemic. So I think she was available. She had knowledge of the program.
Was there any evidence in the record regarding attempts to have telephone contact with his father while he was incarcerated? Yes, Your Honor. I believe it's a lot of letters. However, I never had calls. But what steps did he take to try to facilitate telephone communication with him when he was in detention?
I think she testified that she was unable to make calls to the medic calls. He would have to call. He would have to get her on a crew number and have to get them to call to their medic calls. And I believe her contact information was contained in these reminder letters. But she was never added. She was never called. She was never called. No further questions, Judge. Just in closing, again, I don't think a child should be punished by a parent in custody. I don't think they should put a pause on seeking permission for a child. I think there are steps that parents can take during incarceration. I think this law demonstrates that specifically when we contrast it with Jahan, parents have the ability to take those steps and put themselves in the parent. And that is recognized by this court. However, I don't think that there is case in this matter. So that I will submit.
Thank you. Case is submitted. Counsel is excused.